Terence, I have to ask you to give up your seat if you don't mind, please. If you don't.
I'm gone.
Bye. Because I can see her coming running and I was wondering where she was. Aidan, he landed. Come in. You've made it, Aidan. Sit down. What were you doing? We were wondering why you weren't here.
Oh, I was getting here. I was coming. I've something for you to put into your machine.
You have something for me to put into my machine, or you've put something in the machine?
Well, I didn't put that into the machine. I have a tape I'm recording for you. You really must listen to this.
A bit of audio. Where is it? Is it in the Minigoes Wild folder?
Yeah, I put it into the radio, man. I put it in there. I hope I did it right now. I don't know. You know me.
I've got it for you.
But I think I should. Oh, this is great. You really have to listen to this. Put it on.
Now, what is it? Has it got a name? Something here says GAA Marty Morrissey, is that it?
That's it.
Marty Morrissey coming on my programme again. Oh, he loved that anyway. Good luck. Hurry up, Marty.
No, come on, put it on. You can't miss this.
Here it is. We'll play it. Here we go.
And Tipperary are under pressure now with Paddy Deegan. It has to be a goal or nothing at all. Ball dropping down towards TJ Reid. Batted away, trying to get away. TJ Reid on the D. Bass hops the sticker on the hurley. Hops the sticker on the ground. They have to go for the goal. Here comes John Donnelly. He's going for it. He's going to stop the goal line. Past the goalkeeper. Heroics Tipperary. Heroes won it all. 73 minutes and 43 seconds. Anywhere will do. Send it down to Tommy Barrett. Send it down to Money Gall. To Barack Obama Plaza. We'll all celebrate with a wonderful heroic performance.
Well, it's the hurling match, isn't it?
Yeah, the hurling match on the 6th of July, the semi-final between Kilkenny and Tipperary. It was a great match. Wonderful. It was exciting right down to the very end.
Oh, very well, Lena, and it sounds fantastic, but why are we playing it?
We're playing it because we wouldn't have had any of that without the ash tree.
Yeah, because the hurls are made from
the hurlies. Yeah, the hurlies are the hurls. Depending if you come from Kilkenny, you call them hurls. If you come from anywhere else, you call them hurlies. And they're all an Oman, they're Omaniac, and they come from the ash tree. And you can't get a hurley from anything else. Mm-hmm. And hurling has been an ancient sport in Ireland from the time of Setanta, who turned into Cú Chulainn after he went off playing hurley up the north.
I was wondering why you were dressed in medieval garb. In fact,
and come on, get a grip. That's me good clothes.
Go on anyway, yeah.
But we have this terrible ash dieback now, which is killing our ash
trees.
That's
a disease, yeah. It's been around for a few years
now. It's a fungal disease. It came in here in 2012 on trees from the continent of Europe. They'd been grown in a nursery somewhere over there. And as a consequence, this fungal disease has spread throughout the country and our ash trees are dying, and you see them dying all over the place. And the supplies of hurleys are dying with them. We can't be making hurleys out of plastic. We can't be making them out of bamboo. We need the ash trees for our hurleys.
Well, can I tell you, they did make them out of plastic back in the 1970s. Unless I'm going mad, I certainly remember having one in school. Where I got it, who I got it from, or why I had it, I don't know, because I didn't play hurley. But at any rate, I did have one. And I even saw an ad the other day for bamboo hurleys, if you don't mind. But there were definitely plastic ones, Aina.
That was for kids in school. But you can't be expecting the great Cú Chulainn or the great Setanta or all those players that weren't Dutch. Your man Marty Morrissey was reeling off
playing
with plastic now. Come on.
Fair play to Marty.
We need to have Irish ash, and our ash trees are dying because of this cholera, this ash dieback.
Is that what it's called? Cholera?
Cholera, yeah, yeah. Well, it has a big long Latin name, but the disease is called cholera and it's caused by this fungus. It's spread into this country since 2012. It's gone around all the ash trees and you see them dying back. It cuts off their water supply and they die from the top down, and it's really, really worrying.
But why are we talking about it today?
Well, the reason why we're talking about it today, Derek, is because there is some hope. The scientists over in Kew Gardens in England have just published a report looking at cholera and looking at the effects of it on ash trees. And they have discovered that new little sapling ash trees are beginning to grow with resistance to this disease. So there's hope that we will have ash trees with resistance. This is the very beginning of the work. It's a long process. But the fact that it's possible and that it's happening gives us great hope.
Professor Richard Buggs, Senior Research Leader at Royal Botanic Gardens Kew and also Professor of Evolutionary Genomics at Queen Mary University of London.
I've been looking at your paper, Richard, and it's really very interesting. To explain to the listeners, cholera is ash dieback. It's a fungal disease of ash trees. But adult trees with cholera, their seedlings will germinate, grow up through the leaf litter and appear to be resistant to cholera. And you've noticed this.
Yes, that's right. So although the offspring are similar to their parents, of course, every time a child is born, through sexual reproduction, it has a random assortment of the genes from its four grandparents. It has a mix of the genetic information from its mum and a mix from the dad, and which makes every individual unique. And what's going on in the ash population that we studied is the fungus is coming in when these young trees are just growing up from seed, and it's killing off a lot of them that have a combination of genes from their parents that don't help them to resist the fungus. And so the ones that actually grow up and become young trees and become the next generation are the ones with a really good combination of genes from their parents. And they can actually have a better combination than their parents have, because their parents are the survivors of a similar process that happened years and years before ash dieback was there to be a selective force.
So this selective force is very significant, because if they don't survive it, they're gone. So it's a very quick wipeout. It's not that they grow weakly or they might struggle. They're either growing or they're not. So we really are seeing what we refer to as survival of the fittest. So while evolution is always adapting to change in the environment, this is happening quite quickly on evolutionary terms.
That's correct. It's a sudden new natural selective force that's come in, a fungus that, as you say, can just kill the trees. You know, it's not like a slight change in the climate that is pushing trees to be a bit more heat tolerant, for example. It's something that's coming in that's a death or life issue. And so it can act very quickly, because it can very quickly kill off the young trees with a poor combination of their parents' genetic information and retain the ones that have a good combination. And that's why we're seeing such a rapid shift.
So then it's really important, if, in a sense, if people have ash trees which are affected by cholera, that they're not dead, obviously, because it takes a while for the adults to die, but that they should leave them there in order to produce seedlings, so that it gives the opportunity of new ash to grow. We're not allowed to plant any new ash trees, so the only way of getting new ash trees is through this natural process. So one of the outcomes of your paper would seem to be, if people have seedlings of ash growing in their grounds or growing in their area, leave them be.
Yes, if at all possible, leave them be, leave the adult trees that are producing seeds and leave the young seedlings. But of course, at the same time, you have to bear in mind that a tree with ash dieback can become very dangerous. And so if a tree is by a path or a road, it is often a very good idea to take it down before it gets too dangerous. Otherwise, felling the tree can become quite a dangerous process in itself. So where it's safe to do so, yes, it's good to leave ash trees alone, but of course that's not always possible.
So now when you're looking at the DNA of this, is it one particular locus? Is it one particular gene that gives the resistance, or is it a combination of different circumstances in the genome?
Well, this is something that's really exciting about our study. It's actually thousands of places in the genome of these young ash trees that are being selected for. It's not just one gene that gives resistance, but it's a whole load of different genes that we assume are probably affecting a whole range of different traits within the plant, from the size of its vessels that carry water to maybe the thickness of its membranes, through to the ways in which it can counteract fungi once they come into the plant. And that's really good news, because if you just have one gene that's being selected for that gives resistance, it's quite easy for the fungus then to find a way to overcome that. But if there are thousands involved, it means that the resistance that you're selecting for is probably going to be long-lasting and very hard for the fungus to find a way round.
And of course, this was something that had been predicted by Charles Darwin all those years ago. He had said that significant changes in organisms could result from natural selection driving very many small changes rather than, as you say, one obvious one. So this gives more credence to the prescience of Charles Darwin all those years ago.
Yes, so it shows that Darwin was correct, that natural selection can drive a change in a population. And I suppose what's interesting about our study is a lot of the examples you might read about of natural selection tend to be of quite simple traits that involve just one gene, like, for example, turning a moth from being dark to being lighter in colour. But this is an example where there are many, many genes involved, and different individuals are being selected in slightly different ways. And so we're getting a whole population, the new young population coming up, that on average is more resistant, but each of them are doing that in a slightly different way, which means there's a lot of promise for developing further resistance in the future.
Now, as a consequence of all your work then, do you have hope through this process, which is occurring naturally, that our ash trees will have enough resistance that they won't become extinct, like the way the elms did?
Well, that's something we don't fully know the answer to at the moment. So we are seeing this evolution of slightly greater resistance. But whether that evolutionary process is actually capable of producing an ash tree that is fully resistant to ash dieback, we don't know. Because, of course, this process of natural selection is just selecting on genetic information that's already present in these populations. And once we've got all of the best genes together in an individual, we don't know if that individual will be fully resistant. It's quite likely that it won't be. But at that point where all of the existing genetic information has been selected for, evolution will sort of run out of raw materials. It would have to wait for new mutations to provide new genetic information, and they take a very, very long time to come about, and most of them are not at all helpful. So in a sense, evolution is quite a limited process, and so we do have to think quite seriously about how we can help things along, either by a breeding program within our European ash species or by hybridizing our European ash with ash species from Asia, which have a natural resistance to the fungus. So getting in genetic information that already exists in them and trying to bring that into the gene pool of our ash. And that might be the best way in the end to get completely resistant trees.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you. It's a great study, and I wish you luck with your further studies. Thank you very much, Richard.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
More details, as always, on the website rte.ie/Mooney.